Joining me in the JPR studios is jazz guitarist Stanley Jordan. Stanley, welcome to Jefferson Public Radio.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here.
Where are you from originally?
I mean, it depends on how far back you go, because I was born in Chicago and grew up in the Bay Area. Also lived on the East Coast at three or four different periods in my life, and briefly in the South. And I've kind of moved around a lot. And at this point, it kind of reminds me of the lyrics of a Steppenwolf song. My birthplace should be hard to find because it's changed so many times. I'm not sure where it belongs. But I do feel like basically a citizen of the universe, if I could put it that way, because, you know, I do so much traveling that it's gotten to the point where I feel pretty much at home everywhere I go. You know, when I look forward to, it's like when I'm traveling, I'm constantly coming home, you know, because I'm constantly being reunited with people I know. And it's also intense sometimes, because I see things happen in the news about, you know, disasters in different parts of the world. And I think about it and I realize, hey, wait a minute, I know people there. I wonder how they're doing, you know.
I read that you originally got into guitar because you thought of it as being an exciting instrument, but piano was what you started with?
Yeah, piano was my first instrument, and I was composing at the piano, and my models were, well, Prokofiev was one of my favorite composers, and I remember when I was, I think it was about 8 or 9, my mother got me a recording of the Suite from the Love of Three Oranges by Prokofiev. And it was amazing because a lot of that music they played in some of the action cartoons I watched, you know. And I've always loved the music that kind of stimulates visualization, you know, like music that's used in films, all the stuff from Fantasia. You know, I think even though I'm a musician, I'm also a very visual person, and I like the sort of the synesthesia of how the sound and the images sort of work together. Like sometimes when I'm composing or when I'm just playing, I'm seeing stuff in my mind too, and I'm also playing from that.
When you started off, it was a mix of a little bit of rock and some R&B stuff, but what was it that drew you to jazz?
I started to hear some great jazz on the radio, and I was drawn to it. I was a bit of a loner. I mean, I had a lot of friends. I had some good friends, and I had a lot of fun, but I really cherished my alone time. And I think that that was really valuable to me, because there were a lot of things that maybe my friends might not have understood at the time, but they weren't there, so there was no one to say, hey, don't listen to this or whatever, you know, that's not cool or whatever. And I really got into jazz, and I remember when I was 10, there was this festival, the Nairobi Jazz Festival in Nairobi, which was a name that people were using for East Palo Alto. And man, so many amazing artists played. It was a 3-day thing. So that was, for me, that was like my Woodstock, even though it didn't have nearly as many people there. But I got to see Freddie Hubbard and Stanley Turrentine and Herbie Hancock and George Benson and Prince Lachey and the Charles Moffett family, and just so many amazing artists. And a lot of these people, this was around 1970, and a lot of these artists were kind of at the peak of their experimental phase. Like a lot of what people were doing with music was pushing the boundaries. And so it wasn't just about what the classification of the music is. It wasn't even about that. The creativity itself was part of the reason why people were making music. And I mean creativity like going beyond, you know. And that was really a big inspiration for me, because it really hit me that you really can play music any way you want. I mean, these notes are really flexible, and they're okay with being combined into different progressions and things. And you start to get into how the notes have a personality, and there are relationships between the notes. And so it's almost feels like the notes themselves enjoy being mixed up with each other in different ways. That's how I feel it.
Yeah. I see that you graduated from a school that is not often referenced in terms of musicians. You went to Princeton. What was that experience like? Does Princeton have a music department that was accepting of what you were trying to accomplish, or were you a bit of an odd man out?
Oh, yeah. Well, yes and yes. I mean, I mean, Princeton was amazing. It was an amazing experience for me. At that time, it was one of the few places you could go for serious computer music. And I was very much interested in that because I was hearing this, like, out there celestial music in my head, and I wanted to figure out how to make this music. And I realized that the computer really was the instrument of the future, because the computer was, like, for the first time in human history, we had a musical instrument that could theoretically make any possible sound. I mean, it's an amazing, you know, people who grow up in this area don't realize that we just got here, you know. And so I basically, I would say that was the single most important reason why I chose Princeton as a place to go. But when I got there, I found out that there was so much more too, not only the computer music, but also wonderful composers like Milton Babbitt, who just passed away 2 years ago, was a tremendous inspiration to me as well, composer and music theorist. And I was very much interested in the mathematics of musical form, and I had already done a lot of exploration into that just sort of on my own. And I was amazed to find that Milton Babbitt, who I hadn't even heard of, was pretty much the foremost person in this field. And so I ended up learning a tremendous amount from him. You know, I don't want to digress too far, but when I was 15, once I got really behind in math class, and I realized I was going to have to spend my whole Easter vacation catching up. So I thought, well, okay, what can I do to make this more interesting? So can I relate it to something I know, like music? Maybe that'll make me more motivated. So I started thinking, well, how does math relate to music? And all these lights started going off in my head, and I've been thinking about it ever since. And I would say that math doesn't hold any answers about the essence of music, but it certainly can help understand the forms. And one thing I want to mention before I play, I am very much interested in music therapy, and it's become a big theme in my life. I'm an artist spokesperson for the American Music Therapy Association, and what I do, I'm working toward a master's in music therapy, although right now it's on hold, but I do a lot of independent study, and it's a real important part of my life, because I feel that what music can actually be goes beyond the entertainment. It goes beyond the aesthetic. It goes beyond all of the things that we had, you know, everything that we know before is all fine. But the idea of using music for health and healing is a whole other dimension and a whole new paradigm. And people usually will have, you know, some basic idea of what it is, but whatever you think, I guarantee that it's even bigger than that. Like, the ways that music can be used in healing, turns out that it's very diverse. And we work with a broad range of populations from all ages, all abilities, all levels of functioning. You know, there's your wellness work where you can come into a corporation and help them to use music to give people a better quality of life in the workplace and be more productive, all the way to maybe there's a child who is feeling all these feelings but doesn't have the cognitive ability to express himself, and he finds that music can become a channel for communication, you know. And so I mention this because young people are one of the most important populations that we work with in music therapy, in a lot of different ways. And one of the reasons for this is that I think that people are inherently musical, and maybe they get that beaten out of them, you know, over the years, you know. But when people are young, they have this, the natural affinity with music just flows so easily. So from the music therapy point of view, you know, kids are great to work with because they're all there as far as, like, just being with the music, you know.
It's amazing to watch you play because you've got such a unique style where there's not a lot of strumming going on, but you're playing primarily up on the neck of the guitar. The easy question would be to ask why, but a more in-depth question is, what does that approach allow you to do that playing in a traditional model doesn't?
Let me just give you a kind of a succinct version of it. So what you hear right now is just my left hand. this is just my right hand. And here's both hands together.
Sort of showing that you are two of the world's best one-handed guitarists.
Well, the idea originally came from piano, because piano was my first instrument. And I always wanted to be able to do the pianistic stuff, but I love the expressiveness of the guitar. So I wanted to figure out a way to play with more of the pianistic texture, but do it on guitar. And what I found, and I went through four or five different incarnations of it, and I finally worked out the technique that I'm using now. And what I found is that it's actually not just playing the guitar like a piano, because since you still have all the guitar stuff, it's almost, to me, almost like a new instrument. You know, it's guitarish. I mean, it is a guitar, but the possibilities open up a completely new world.
How many modifications did you have to make to the guitar itself, either in tuning or in the way it's set up?
No real modifications. I made some adjustments. I use a different tuning most of the time from the standard guitar tuning.
I wanted to ask you about the point at which you kind of extracted yourself from the music business. You took a pretty lengthy hiatus and dumped a management company and sort of walked away from it. And you were still playing, obviously, you were still playing, but you weren't really involved in the music industry per se. What was that period like and the decision behind that?
Well, there was a point where I realized that in order to go beyond what I had done, I had to, in a sense, transcend it and step out of the places where I had been, you know, like, you know, well, you know, your album was number one for a year. How are you going to top that? Are you going to go for 2 years now? Or, you know, there's like, that's that one dimensional thinking. But if you think in a broader scope, okay, so you had a really successful album. How are you going to top that? Well, how about if I can use music, not just for, in the music industry and, you know, selling recordings, but what about using music for healing? Or what about delving deeper into the possibilities of the music itself? And when I found that when I started exploring some of those things, the more I did that, the more I started to feel kind of like a fish out of water. Mm. Like whenever you have people try to save you from yourself, you know, it's as you know, it's not like I was on some gambling binge or something, you know, okay, maybe all the musical combinations were a little bit of an obsession. I'll grant you that. But I do feel that I did have to kind of disengage for a little while in order to go to some of the places I went. And it was during that time that I really started to get into music therapy and a lot of doors opened up. And I do feel that I've grown as a person and I bring more to it now. And one of the things that came out of that is I started thinking about aesthetic philosophy and how aesthetic philosophy should be the basis for marketing in the arts, which is a whole other subject which we don't really have time to get into. But the basis of it, or the upshot of it, is that it motivated me to get back into the scene because it gave me new ideas for how I could maybe be a little different from the conventional pigeonhole, but still figure out how to find my place.
Stanley Jordan is my guest live on Open Air here on the Rhythm and News Service of Jefferson Public Radio. What are you going to play next for us?
I'm going to play something that just tries to go right to the heart of the matter. Thank you.
It's Stanley Jordan live here on Open Air on the Rhythm and News service of Jefferson Public Radio. Your newest album, which came out summer of 2011, called Friends. It's got an incredible cast of guest artists on it.
Are so amazing on that album.
But almost not so much guest artists as it is a collaborative effort of a bunch of folks that you work with. Like Charlie Hunter's on it, Kenny Garrett's on it, Ronnie Laws, Russell Malone, Christy McBride. How did you pick the folks? I mean, a CD only holds so much, right? So how do you pick who you get to work with?
Yeah, man, it was, man, you know, I mean, I thought about it. Who would I want? I had the idea in my mind. Who would I want? And I got almost the exact list of people that I wanted, and I'm so pleased. And they all contributed so many wonderful things. And, you know, it was a get-together. It was a celebration. It was a party, you know? I mean, we enjoyed playing together, and I think that really comes through. You know, when I think about the kind of the spectrum of different kinds of things I recorded, this is definitely more on the uplifting, joyous side overall. Mm. There's some stuff like the song that I did with Regina Carter, the duet that she and I did, is very kind of contemplative and very sort of more on the deep side. But and that was wonderful too. But overall, it's just really the music of joy and celebration.
Yeah, cool. What kind of listening do you do? Do you listen to a lot of other artists and absorb ideas and things?
I try to keep my mind open. You know, I mean, I jump from one thing to another. I really don't have a lot of imposed limits on that. I mean, just lately, I've been listening to a lot of electronic dance music and just kind of listening to it and kind of figuring out, okay, you know, how would I approach that form of music? And so I'm kind of putting together an approach to, because I have a background in electronic and in computer music, and I've hardly used it in all these years, you know, and I've just been so traditional in terms of just being a guitar player. And yet I still hear all the celestial stuff in my head that you can't do on guitar. Sometimes I'll apply effects on the guitar and I can get some other sounds. But my feeling is that with a lot of the electronic music that I hear, it's really interesting in terms of bringing a new palette of sounds and timbres, and I love that. But it's always curious to me why they always use the same old harmonic and melodic and rhythmic structures. It's like these instruments, it's almost like these instruments were made to play another kind of music, and they're not doing it. You know, and it's just so obvious. It's like right there, just do it, you know? And so, you know, I'm getting tired of, like, you know how people like yell at their TV sets. I'm yelling at my iTunes or whatever. So it's time for me to do my own version.
Is it true that there's a Stanley Jordan computer factoid with Macintosh?
I did the startup sound for the first line of Power Macs.
Really?
The 8100, the 6100, all those. And I was at Apple, and this was a time when a lot of people were saying, oh, they're going to go out of business and everything. And I said, no, they aren't. And what I did is I actually went to the headquarters just to do a concert there and do a little pep talk and say, you know, a lot of people appreciate what you guys are doing. Please keep up the good work. And I ended up getting asked to do the startup sound. And I thought it was a real fascinating thing because this was a new generation of computers with the RISC processor, reduced instruction set computer, was faster than any personal computer ever before. And it was going to allow new possibilities. And the first thing this thing does when you turn it on is make this sound. And so I realized this sound is really important. So I asked a lot of questions of the people at Apple, like, what is this computer about? what is, you know what I mean? What is the essence? What is the soul of this computer? And I'll see if I can figure out how to capture that in a sound. So one of the things is, well, they said it's going to be fast. It's going to be the fastest computer ever. So I wanted the sound to be fast. It had to come on real, real fast. I'm curious why so many of these computer companies, they've sort of gone back to the old, you know, sounds that to me aren't that interesting. But anyway, the other thing is that they said that people are going to be doing media on your computer. Well, now it's, you know, taken for granted. But they said, yes, people are going to be watching movies and listening to music on your computer. And so the quality of the images and the sound is going to be like really rich. So rather than use a synthesized sound, I wanted to use an actual acoustic instrument. So what I did is I strummed harmonics on a guitar, and we did like two or three different versions. I think we did three different ones and we mixed them together. And the other thing is that they said that that Apple's coming back and we've got attitude. We want people to feel that. So I thought, well, then it's going to have to be a rock and roll chord, you know? And so there's just a lot of things like that I kind of put into it. And I thought that was really an interesting thing. And I enjoy that kind of work because I always think of music in the big picture. I like bringing other things into it. So this was an opportunity to do that.
That's a really cool side project.
Yeah.
Did you get one? Did they give you a computer?
Yeah.
I hope, right?
Yeah.
Or a couple of them?
I got an 8100.
Nice. So what's up next for you? What are you working on right now and in the next year?
Well, there's different levels of how I could answer that. Like one level, the sort of traditional, you know, recording artist careers. I'm working on a new album.
Okay.
I'm composing for a new album.
Do you have a timeline on it yet?
And the proposed release date is next February.
Okay.
We may be able to get it out before that. There's a lot of factors involved, and I really want to get it right. So I'm not really caring so much about when it comes out. You know, I just want to get it right. I am going to have some guest artists on it. There's not a whole lot else that I want to really say about that, but I just want to say basically that I'm ready to kind of step into another level of music, and I want to do some things that have kind of been there all along, but for whatever reason haven't really been represented so much in the recordings that I've made, and I want to start to step into some of these areas now.
Stanley Jordan is my guest live here on Jefferson Public Radio's Rhythm and News Service, streaming at ijpr.org. Stanley Jordan's latest album is called Friends. You have time to play one more for us?
Yeah, I'd love to play one more thing. And I just want to thank you for being here and for all the great stuff you guys are doing for the community.
It is our pleasure.
Really, yeah,
thank you.
It's really valuable, so please keep it up. Thank you.
Stanley Jordan, this has been a real pleasure. Thank you for taking time to visit with us.
It was my pleasure. Thanks very much.